All right, for those of you who have books, we are on lesson 62. And so through this section that we're reading, there's really three rebellions. We went over one of those last week, which was God sending the spies into the promised land to spy it out. And then what they come back with is a report of a land that is flowing with milk and honey. They bring this is during the grape harvest, and they bring this just big limb with tons of grapes on it. And so they show the people that the land is good, but their report of the people in the land is, hey, there's no way that this is going to work. They're going to stomp us out. And then in classic human fashion, God takes away the promised land from those people, with the exception of a couple of the spies and their families, and the children. I believe it was under 20. And so he takes away this promise of the promised land from these people, with the exception of the younger generation. And then we're going to start getting into these next rebellions. But in classic human form, what did all these people who just got the promise taken away, what'd they do? They stormed the castle, right? They're like, hey, this is... And you see this moment of realization where in their heads they're saying, okay, we messed up. They admit to it, right? They say, okay, we've sinned against God. We've taken all these, we've forgot about all the stuff that he's just done for us, leading us out of the land, all these miracles that he's done for us. And we've forgot about that, and that's our bad. And so what's their reaction? It's not necessarily repentance, is it? It's taking this promise into their own hand and saying, hey, I understand. I understand we messed up. I'm sorry, God. This is what you wanted me to do a little bit earlier, and let's go ahead and storm the castle, and let's take it over, and let's grab hold of that promise, because we know the land's good, and we've realized we've done wrong. And in this rebellion story, we're going to be in number 16. In this rebellion story, we have a lot of similarity, right? This is an interesting one. So we're going to read through it. There's going to be a lot to point out, as I've promised in past weeks. I'm going to try to leave a little more time for questions, since I typically run over quite a bit. So we're going to read through this number 16. Let me see here. Because we have, the Bible is so... we're getting these groups. There's three rebellions, right? And we see this, the structure of how God has instructed people to build the tabernacle. We kind of get this glimpse of there's this innately chosen, right? And then among this innately chosen, the Levites, the group of priests, the people who are supposed to take care of what is God's house at the moment, has a group set aside that's just the next level of chosen, right? We have this next level, which is the priest who can go into the Holy of Holies. It's Aaron and his family. And oftentimes, we're going to learn a little bit about greed, about, again, just human tendency. It's crazy how much of this correlates to what we do today. Let me flip over there real fast. All right, number 16. Now Korah, the son of Izhar, son of Kohath, son of Levi, and of Dathan, and of Abiram, the sons of Eliab, on the son of Pelah, sons of Reuben, took men, and they rose up before Moses with a number of people of Israel, 250 chiefs of the congregation chosen from the assembly, well-known men. They assembled themselves together against Moses and against Aaron and said to them, you have gone too far, For all in the congregation are holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Why then do you exalt yourself above the assembly of the Lord? When Moses heard it, he fell on his face, and he said to Korah and all of his company, in the morning the Lord will show who is his and who is holy, and will bring him near to him. The Lord, whom he chooses, the one whom he chooses, he will bring near to him. Do this, take censers, Korah and all his company, put fire in them, and put incense on them before the Lord tomorrow. And the man whom the Lord chooses shall be the holy one. You have gone too far, sons of Levi. And Moses said to Korah, hear now, you sons of Levi, is it too small a thing for you that the God of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself, to do service in the tabernacle of the Lord, and to stand before the congregation to minister to them? You see what Moses is doing. These people are having an issue with their standing, right? They're pretty high up in everything, but they're not the highest. They're not Aaron. They're not these group that get to go into the Holy of Holies. And he's saying, hey, look, we're all God's chosen people. We're all God's chosen people. So, I mean, shouldn't we all be able to do this, right? Because they have an issue with their standing. And their challenge, again, we've talked about it over and over, who do the people look to? Not God. Moses. They've got it backwards. They're like, Moses is the guy. And what they're trying to do now is say, hey, Moses is the guy, but God should be the guy. So they twist it a little bit, and they take away the guy whom God has appointed, right? All this, we see these convenient twists of what God is saying. And this is no different. They're challenging Moses and Aaron, saying, hey, y'all are the ones who put yourselves in this position, not God. So let's challenge it. And what we don't see is just a little bit earlier, Aaron has a couple sons who, and this is used a lot of times in the wrong way, so I'm briefly mention it, and maybe if y'all have questions, we can talk about it later. But we all hear the strange fire, right? We've all heard the strange fire verses. This is right before this. And what happens to Aaron's sons? They say strange fire, they're burning incense, and they weren't supposed to be. They were drinking, and they're burning incense. And what happens to Aaron's son? They die, right? And so this is a direct call from Moses. Right after this, we have this story. And what does Moses say? All right, well, let's see who's holy. Let's burn incense. Because this is a proven thing, right? that God disapproves of the wrong way in doing this. According to God's command, the Holy of Holies, these priests should be burning incense to God in a very specific manner, not drunk, not... So they have this line and they have this example right before. And so now what Moses is saying is, hey, let's burn incense, because we know there's only one group that can do that. And so he's calling them to the table, and what you would think is going through these people's mind is, I don't know about that, right? Because Moses is calling them to the table here. But what he also says is, hey, is it not good enough that God has set you apart? Is it not good enough for you that God has taken you and setting you apart to be the group that moves God's house, that works in the tabernacle, that gets to do all these amazing things? Is that not enough for you? They get a little greedy, right? They don't want to just be set aside from the Israelites, but they want to be set aside in their own group. They want that. They desire that. So we see this greed, and we're going to continue to read here. And would you seek the priesthood also? Therefore, it is against the Lord that you and all your company have gathered together. What is Aaron that you grumble against him? He's pointing it to the right direction, right? What you're doing is against God. What is Aaron that you're grumbling against him? Aaron's just a guy appointed by God. And Moses sent to call Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and they said, "We will not come up. Is it a small thing that you have brought us up out of the land flowing with milk and honey to kill us in the wilderness, that you must also make yourself a prince over us?" Wow, there's so much to unpack, and I'm going to try to do it quick. What's the land flowing of milk and honey? The promised land. God's promised land. What are they saying is the land flowing with milk and honey? Egypt, where there were slaves, right? They're saying, is it not enough that you've taken us out of the land flowing of milk and honey? They're relating Egypt as slaves to God's promised land. Wow. Is it not enough that you've taken us out of the land flowing of milk and honey to kill us in the wilderness, that you must also make yourself a prince over us? Uh-oh. I made my son mad. He's saying, look, is it not enough that you've brought us out of this great setup that we had? And then we go to this wilderness that we're all over and over. We say we're going to die, but what happens? God provides. We see this over and over and over, and they bring it up again. And who do they credit all this to? Not God again, but Moses. And then he says that you would make yourself a prince over us. Now, one thing that you'll hear from a lot of people, Moses carries probably more humility than anybody else in the Bible, obviously aside from Christ. He is not somebody that boasts his power. In fact, most of the time when he's talking to God, he's not a guy that comes across that necessarily wants power, right? He's not somebody. At the very inception of it, God's calling him to do this thing, and he's like, nah, I don't think so. Like, who am I for them to look at? I don't speak that well. He makes five excuses, right? He makes all these excuses. And their reaction to all of this is, again, they get this promised land taken from them, and they're the whole time, instead of talking to God, who do they talk to is Moses. They're blaming all this on Moses. And because they're not a part of this promise, they start calling Egypt the promised land. We've been over the golden calf story. We've been over all these stories. And this one just seems so familiar. You have not brought us into the land flowing with milk and honey, nor given us inheritance of fields and vineyards. Will you put out the eyes of these men? We will not come up. And Moses was very angry and said to the Lord, "Do not respect their offering. I have not taken one donkey from them, and I have not harmed one of them." And Moses said to Korah, "Be present, you and all your company, before the Lord, you and they, and Aaron tomorrow, and let everyone of every one of you take his censer and put incense on it, and every one of you bring before the Lord his censer, 250 censers, you also and Aaron each his censer." So every man took his censer and put fire in them and laid incense on them and stood at the entrance of the tent of meeting with Moses and Aaron. Then Korah assembled all the congregation against them at the entrance of the tent of meeting. And the glory of the Lord appeared to all the congregation, and the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, "Separate yourselves from among this congregation, that I may consume them." In a moment, and they fell on their faces and said, "O God, the God of the spirits of all flesh, shall one man sin, and will you be angry with all the congregation?" And the Lord spoke to Moses, "Say to the congregation, 'Get away from the dwelling of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram.'" Then Moses rose up and went to Dathan and Abiram, and the elders of Israel followed him, and he spoke to the congregation, saying, "Depart, please, from the tents of these wicked men, and touch nothing of theirs, lest you be swept away with all their sins." So they got away from the dwelling of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. And Dathan and Abiram came out and stood at the door of their tents together with their wives, their sons, and their little ones. And Moses said, "Hereby you shall know that the Lord has sent me to do all these works, and that it has not been of my own accord. If these men die, as all men die, or if they are visited by the fate of all mankind, then the Lord has not sent me. But if the Lord creates something new, and the ground opens its mouth and swallows them up with all that belongs to them, and they go down alive into Sheol, then you shall know that these men have despised the Lord." Again, what is Moses pointing back to? God, every time. Moses is pointing back to God every single time. He says, if this happens, then you know they despised the Lord. Not Moses, the Lord. And again, I want to bring in the intercession of Moses. They have this whole congregation of people. God says, "I'm about to wipe them out. Step away, I'm going to wipe them out." And you see this very repetitively. You see it with Abraham especially. It's almost identical. "Well, would you wipe them all out for the sins of one man?" And Abraham saying, "Well, God, what if there's one good person in there? He starts it for us like the worst negotiating tactic ever, right? Starts at, I think it's 40, and then backs all the way down to 5. And God's saying, "Hey, if there's 5, then I'll leave them alone." And so we see this play out, and we see this over and over. And this is, I believe, the 4th time that Moses intercedes for his people. He does it on Sinai, the golden calf story. He does it over and over when God becomes angry with his people. Who's there to step in? Moses is interceding. All right. Let's see. "As soon as he had finished speaking all these words, the ground under them split apart, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up, with their households and all the people who belonged to Korah and their goods. So they and all that belonged to them went down alive into Sheol. And the earth closed over them, and they perished from the midst of the assembly. And all Israel who were around them fled at their cry, for they said, 'Lest the earth swallow us up.' And fire came out from the Lord and consumed the 250 men offering the incense. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, 'Tell Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, to take up the censers out of the blaze. Then scatter the fire far and wide, for they have become holy. As for the censers of these men who have sinned at the cost of their lives, let them be made into hammered plates as a covering for the altar, for they offered them before the Lord. And they became holy. Thus they shall be a sign of the people to Israel.'" Wow. Again, this is not necessarily the comforting side of the stories that we read, right? But we've talked about God having to have both sides, justice and mercy. And we see in all of these stories, we see both hands dealt, right? Moses intercedes. God's mercy saves a whole lot of people in the congregation. But justice is the side that people get most uncomfortable with God. And that's what, guys, it's not meant to be a comfortable book to read. Right? It's really not. The stories in there, we talked several weeks ago about the firstborn. God coming in and taking the firstborn. That's uncomfortable to read, isn't it? But when we take that part of God out, we miss the whole story. We miss, and it's what people do nowadays, and I know I sound like I'm beating a dead horse, but we try, the world is, man, a really messed up place, right? And the church often conforms to it. We try to justify, or we try to tweak a little. In this moment, you have a bunch of people who are saying, God's called Aaron, God's made all these incredibly specific instructions that I think if I just tweaked a little bit, it would be better for me, right? If I tweaked it a little bit, I'd have a little more power, I'd be one of the guys that gets to go in the Holy of Holies, I would get to be one of the guys, right? And we see that over and over. Just the tweaking of what God says to try to make it more comfortable or more profitable to us. Never meant to be that, right? We're talking about a guy that stands up for God over and over and over and over, who, guess what? Again, Jason said it before, he doesn't go into the promised land. Not the earthly promised land, right? He misses it. He is a just God. And what that should incite in us, oftentimes most people's relationship with God comes out of fear at inception. I'm not sure that it's meant to stay that way, but these people back then, if you talk to even a modern-day Jew, there's things that you can appreciate from the Jews. They have a healthy fear of God. They have a respect of who God is. And oftentimes in our culture today, it's kind of easy to throw that respect out. Why? Because we like to take one piece of God and focus on it, which is God's mercy. And we miss the just. They're probably going to buzz me here in about 5 minutes. Is there questions, comments on this story, section, anything we've been talking about? This is the first time y'all have had an opportunity to ask questions, so congratulations. Yep. You just see, and guys, I always like to, I think you have to walk in these people's shoes, right? I always try to frame it from, the golden calf story is easy to look back, and what did I say? I probably would have been one of those people, right? Because it's such a fine line that you're trying to tread, right? And then you have people who do the other side and make 10 different laws to try to separate you from the... And then you can get into trouble. And that's Christ comes and is like, well, is that God's law or is that man's law, right? And you see all this happen. And so put yourself in these folks' shoes. How many of us have at one point in time probably made not a godly decision for wealth, riches, or status. It's easy to get there, right? Especially if you disc, and this is the ease in modern day society, is we don't necessarily have these, right? God's not coming and wiping congregations in fire. And so there's comfort. And when you get somebody that is, it's just politicianing, right? If I'm a salesperson, that may not be a good thing, but that's how my brain's wired. And so that's all that people have to do nowadays, is present a pitch that you deem clear enough, right? And people follow that. In today's day and age, how many, man, this is going to sound bad. In football, I could get 72 guys fired up in a two-minute pep talk. There's some people that have a way with words that are going to get people fired up. And I imagine Cora is one of these people. He gets a lot of folks fired up in the wrong direction. And there's no backboard that these people are bouncing. They're just buy all in, right? And you see that, you can see that with anything, with elections, with people are just, they want to buy into something. When you deviate and you're not buying into God, you're buying into people. Man, that's a coin flip, isn't it? And these people aren't buying into God. They're buying in to, and you just see the whole human condition up front is, are they buying into God or are they buying into Moses? Buying into Moses. Well, how easy is it for us to say, it's just a guy, right? Go ahead. And I've said it before, the best I ever feel is when I'm in line with God's plan. But how many times have I let that in my personal life fall away? It's not easy. It wasn't supposed to be easy. It wasn't made to just be easy. That's part of Satan's game, is the ease does not come in a relationship with God. It's hard for whatever reason. I see Jason at the gym every morning. That's not easy. I imagine he feels great about it, but have y'all ever done something consistently for a long time? I don't know how many years of my life I put into football and lifting into all this stuff. And then I get married and I don't do it for 2 years, and then, wow, getting back into it is not fun, right? It's not easy. These things that are beneficial are never easy. My mom's got she gave me a book, it's called Do Hard Things. But it's a mindset that people have to get into, and following Christ is a hard thing. Because people you're going to run into on a daily basis are going to make it harder. And the things that you have around you, in your phones, and your all this stuff is going to make it harder. And so it's, you see that repetitively. Is when people step away, it's not good for them, but for some reason, stepping away is easy. It's easier for me to think, Well, you know, I can probably stand up and give one heck of a speech in front of 250 guys, and I can mount this little coup, and we can take over, and then guess what? I'm not having to lay. I'm going to be one of the guys that gets to walk behind the tent instead of carry posts, right? I'm going to be the Moses character that is just going to walk up and down a mountain and tell people what God say. I'm going to be. And I think you're right. It's about the ease of life. Because if they're ruling their people and you're doing it the wrong way, life could probably get pretty easy on earth, right? You've got however many hundreds of thousands of people at your command by just inciting a little bit of fire up in a few people. You're going to overturn the whole thing. But that's the thought process that's a lot easier to have nowadays. But again, if you're on the wrong side of your thought process, I'm not going against Kevin, what he preaches on Sunday. I'm not going against Hunter, what he talks about on Sunday. I'm not going against these priests that are preachers that you may listen to on a podcast. You're going against God, right? And I'm not saying, I don't want to put myself in that position. I'm not saying that everything that I speak from my mouth is just 100% tried and true. A lot of times I'll tell you this is my opinion on it, and y'all do some digging. But it's y'all's job to do some digging and figure out which way it's supposed to fall. And that's, in our human minds, pretty easy to contort. And biblically, you see just a large pattern of repetition. After this story, we have another rebellion, the third and final rebellion, when God sends serpents down that kill a lot of people. And you see this rebellion, but you also see the mercy. He creates a staff that people are to look on. Go ahead. Everybody wants to be a boss until they are one, right? I've learned that very quickly, and I guess at a young age, because I got to a place where I could actually have some sway, and a lot of times it's not fun. You look at Moses, and what does he do? He's begging the people to walk away. And he's been through a lot of instances where people don't walk away. He's losing his family in this instance, right? This is a lot of people, but he's probably losing folks that are close to his family. And yes, I mean, on the wealth, there's a thing called prosperity gospel. Our promise isn't of this world. There's a lot of... Christ didn't walk down, overthrow the Roman Empire, and live lavish, right? He lived a life of a servant. And Moses, being a guy who was one of the guys in Scripture, never saw the ease of the promised land, the milk and honey, the huge clusters of grapes, all the goodness. Where did he spend his days? In the desert, eating the same thing every day, manna and quail and water. And so that kind of debunks the prosperity gospel, right? Not saying that folks won't do good, but it is a call when you are doing good to understand that that is God's doing, and that your doing good should be used for God's doing. I guess I'm out. Hey, it's a couple questions, couple comments. We had enough time today.